350,000 college students call Boston home. That, according to Bloomberg in 2016, gives Boston the fourth highest student population of any U.S. city. So that's below New York, L.A., and Chicago, and above cities like Dallas, Miami, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. On Monday, the Supreme Court will hear two cases that could have a massive impact on most, if not all, the approximately 100 institutions these students attend in Greater Boston, and change the face of who they are. The cases center on affirmative action. Here with us to help understand exactly what is at stake, Tufts professor, researcher, and author Natasha Waraku. Her new book is called Is Affirmative Action Fair? Natasha, welcome back.
Tiziana, it's great to be here.
Looking forward to have this conversation with you. So we've talked about affirmative action on the show off and on over the years, but for people who may just kind of be tuning into the issue now, we want to really break this down. So let's begin with square one. What is affirmative action in terms of college admissions?
So affirmative action is simply the consideration of membership in an underrepresented group, particularly race in the United States context, when you are making selection decisions.
That simple.
That's it.
Because I was kind of expecting, right? But no, right? That simple. Okay. So when did colleges start to include it as part of the admissions process?
So the first colleges started in considering race and admissions were in the early 1960s.
Okay.
Some both public and private colleges that were really looking at the kind of civil rights movement, trying to be get ahead of the curve and be leaders in the kind of movement for racial justice and recognizing the lack of access to their institutions in the past and trying to right those wrongs. Those were very small programs, but that's where it really got started. And then those programs expanded both in terms of how many colleges were doing it and also how many students they were admitting through those programs.
Okay, so I do want to dive into the two cases that are going to go in front of the Supreme Court, especially since one of them is Harvard University. But let's step back for a second first and say, right now, where are we in terms of legality? So what are colleges allowed and not allowed to do today?
So the U.S. Supreme Court has affirmed affirmative action multiple times in four cases that have made it to the U.S. Supreme Court. And what is allowed is a holistic look at an application. So if you have a holistic process in which you sort of looking at a student in their context in terms of their race, but also, you know, obviously their academics, their extracurriculars, teacher recommendations, the whole package, that is allowed. You're not allowed to have any kind of racial quotas. You're not allowed to give people kind of numeric, like you get extra points quantitatively. So you sort of have to take a broad look rather than using race. You have to use it holistically rather than quantitatively.
Okay, so the Harvard case specifically involves Asian American students. We will dive into that, but I want to start first with the basic arguments for and against affirmative action that are likely to get presented on Monday. So I'm going to have you argue both sides of this case. We used to do this with Judge Nancy Gertner sometimes. So the basic argument for affirmative action.
So I think there are a lot of arguments for affirmative action, but the one that is going to be argued in court there's just one that will be argued in court because that's the one that has been affirmed, which is that affirmative action creates a diverse learning environment in which all students benefit. This is the rationale. It's called the diversity rationale that in 1979 in the Bucky versus University of California case, Justice Powell said it could be justified because of that. And so they will argue that the diversity that affirmative action creates leads to a better educational experience for all students in terms of learning outcomes, in terms of all kinds of outcomes in the future. And there's a lot of research that shows that that is the case.
And then what will the argument against be?
The argument against is quite simply that it amounts to racial discrimination. And race is a kind of suspect, what lawyers would call a suspect class in the United States. It's kind of ironic we have these anti-discrimination laws to protect racial minorities from discrimination. And now advantage groups are using this law to say, hey, this is a suspect class. This requires strict scrutiny. You have to really demonstrate to the court that you have a good reason to be using race. And they say that they are arguing that, in fact, this is racial discrimination towards whites, and, you know, in the Harvard case, also towards Asian Americans.
So that's, let's add that layer now, because that is an interesting twist with the Harvard case. So explain that.
Sure. So, you know, Ed Blum, who's behind this case, was behind the last case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court in 2016, the Fisher versus Texas case. And in that case, Blum recruited a white plaintiff to argue that affirmative action amounted to racial discrimination towards her. He lost that case, and then he realized that, you know, Asian Americans are actually doing quite well academically on the whole, obviously a very diverse group, but on average, and high numbers of Asian Americans in our elite colleges. But what he saw was that Asian Americans tend to have higher levels of achievement even than their white peers who are admitted to these colleges. And he said, well, he kind of, I think, thought he could gain more support for his case if he had a plaintiff that was a racial minority, as if to say that if there is a racial minority group that is doing well in admissions, then that means that it's a fit, that we don't need attention to race, and maybe they are experiencing racial discrimination. And it's kind of funny in that case. I remember when it first came out, you know, I was like, I don't understand, how is he making this connection? These are two separate issues. But he very cleverly, you know, made this, said, well, you know, there are all these reasons to think that there might be discrimination. And by the way, the remedy should be, you know, ending affirmative action, ending all attention to race, which, you know, why are we talking about two, you know, as if, you know, there's a set number of slots for white students and then students of color have to sort of, you know, fight for the rest of them.
So we're speaking with Natasha Waraku, who's a sociology professor at Tufts University, researcher, author most recently of Is Affirmative Action Fair? And we're preparing for this affirmative action case. There are two cases going before the Supreme Court next Monday, one of them a Harvard case. But with 350,000 students who go to higher education in Boston, this matters to us how this is going to play out. So, Natasha, two things. First, I want to flag for listeners that we spoke with you recently about another recent book that you published where you went deep into a suburban community in Greater Boston and looked at the comparison between how white families and Asian American families approach education with eyes towards elite colleges and universities. So you've dove deep into this research. How has that affected how you see? I mean, your book is called Is Affirmative Action Fair? You draw a conclusion, and I would argue that that conclusion is, yes, it is, because of the various missions that universities put forward. How did that follow that path for us?
Sure. So in that book, I looked at, you know, I talk a lot about how families have different, you know, all parents all over the country, really almost all over the world, care about education in the contemporary period, right? We want our kids to do well in school. We push them to do well in school. We want them to go to college. But how we do that varies according to, you know, what I call in the book that I, you know, I borrow a term from another sociologist, cultural repertoires. Like, how do we, what are our ideas about how to get ahead? And for a lot of, you know, highly skilled immigrants from, particularly from India and China, who are coming through, you know, either for graduate degrees or through a highly skilled visa program, they did quite well academically in, you know, back home. And in order to do that, they had to basically do really well on a national exam. And so they're, you know, they have that is the skills that they bring for getting ahead. And they impart those skills to their children and they really focus on academics. Now, it's not to say that white parents don't focus on academics. They do. But they talk much more about balance, right? And wanting their children to also have room for extracurriculars. And so there's a different emphasis. And, you know, I think this explains why in, you know, in the same school context, the Asian American kids might be doing a little bit better academically. Whereas when you look at the varsity sports teams, you know, you'll see more white students on those teams. And it's because of these, you know, different ways that parents have for getting their kids ahead. And so when we look at those differences, it's easy to say, oh, well, you know, Asian Americans are just, you know, doing better. But the reality is that we're focusing on different domains. And it does explain, you know, differences in SAT scores, GPAs. But the real question is, you know, what is the quote unquote right way to admit students? Should we be looking at, you know, also extracurriculars, all these other kinds of excellence? Should we be looking at, you know, what major they want to study? And I think when we do that, we see, you know, it's much more complicated than just saying, you know, there are differences in SAT scores, so that's discrimination.
So that's a helpful marker because we know with the Harvard case, as you've laid out, the strategy is to look at potential discrimination against Asian American students. Previous cases brought that might have potentially gone to the court would have looked at discrimination against white students. Of course, we are wildly more diverse as an American nation, and the students who are applying to colleges and universities are much more racially diverse and ethnically diverse than those two groups. So there are two things that I kind of want to bring forward now. First, let's go back to this idea that you assert about the mission of colleges and universities and the fact that what's legal now is to take a holistic look at the diversity and interaction of the student body in the way students learn. Why is that important, and how does it affect, for example, the 350,000 students who are studying in Boston now? We're in October. They're in school.
Yeah. So, you know, after this decision in the late 1970s, social scientists kind of got to work to look at, well, how does it matter? Does it matter if you're on a racially diverse college campus? And they found that it does. They found that students feel a greater sense of academic competence. They feel like stronger sense of leadership. We know that there's greater down the line in adulthood, greater civic participation. Racial attitudes seem to be affected by things like being on a diverse campus, having a roommate of a different race. Even if you don't have friends of a different race, the data suggests that just being on a more diverse college campus seems to matter in terms of your racial attitude. So there are all of these benefits that decades of social science has shown us that that are affected by diversity on your college campus.
And then both your book and other articles that have been written in preparation for this hearing on Monday suggest that when certain states, for example, have reduced racial considerations or have outlawed them in college admissions in their states, we in fact see a decrease in diversity among the students in institutions. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, 9 states now have bans on affirmative action. So in all of their state schools, there is no affirmative action law allowed. And, you know, in California, you know, very populous state, has not been able to practice affirmative action for over 2 decades. So we have, that amount of research to see what happens when we end affirmative action. And it's not good. So we see year-on-year declines in underrepresented minority students on these campuses. We see even wages seem to be affected. There was a study in California that looked at, you know, applicants to the UC system before and after the ban. And they find that students, underrepresented students, started going to lower status colleges. And because of that, they were less likely to graduate, particularly in STEM fields. And because of that, Latino students seem to have a 5% decline in wages. There's another study that looks at multiple states, and we see a 5% decline in underrepresented students in medical schools. And we know from the research that, you know, a same-race doctor makes a difference in terms of your treatment, your sense of comfort in the office. So we know that all of these things are going to happen if we end affirmative action, and I think that will be devastating.
So the research suggests real practical impact for students who come through at the colleges and universities here, right, and across the United States.
Absolutely. It's going to affect those students. It's going to affect who is able to go to those colleges as well.
Okay. In our remaining minute and a half or so, the last piece of this puzzle to understand, right now, affirmative action is legal, and lower courts have upheld the practice by the two universities, the two cases in question here. This would be a moment where the Supreme Court would say, yes, if the Supreme Court changed course, would say, yes, the lower courts were right in the law they interpreted, but the court was wrong in the past and affirmative action can't stand. That's where we are, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So what do you expect?
You know, I was very cautiously optimistic, I think, in the spring, and thought, you know, there's these 4 cases, there's precedents, there's no reason to change course. I think with the Dobbs decision
in the
spring, which came as a surprise, I don't know. I don't know why they took the case, so it's hard to say. You know, it's possible that they will simply narrow even more affirmative action but not end it and say, well, you have to be able to prove to us that you have tried every other race-neutral alternative and show us the data. And if you can do that, then it's okay. That's possible. Or they may simply say any attention to race is not allowed. So we'll have to wait and see.
All right. Natasha Warrick, who is a professor at Tufts University and author of Is Affirmative Action Fair? Natasha, thank you for
being
with
us
today. The Supreme Court hears arguments in the two cases dealing with affirmative action in the college admission process next Monday, and we will continue our coverage as that unfolds.